Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Happy fall.
Happy fall.
It's fall, right?
What a wonderful time of year.
Cameron's pretty pumped. She's feeling pretty chipper.
Guys, I've been able to wear sweatpants and a sweater recently, and it's been glorious.
Well, you can do that during the summer if you want.
No.
So welcome. We're going to do a movie called Brave.
We are. We felt like this had some fall vibes.
Yeah, her hair specifically.
Her hair has some fall vibes. And it's like misty, rolling hills, forests. Got like that folklore vibe for you Taylor Swift fans.
While I was watching this film, I was on my phone and I was trying to watch it out in the sun. And this film is very dark. Like, literally, the picture is very dark. It's hard to see
so
a lot
Corbin
of things.
So Corbin didn't see the movie.
So there's
he
some
reviewed
parts,
something else.
So there are some parts that were a little bit obscured. I just was surprised at how dark it was. I think, do you think they did that partly? Obviously, it's part of the story. But I wonder if they did it intentionally to really make her hair pop.
Well, I mean, I'm sure
Thoughts?
There were some moments, but I'm sure they weren't like, guys, let's stick her in a random dark place so we can really see her
I think
hair.
There's something there with that. So if I ever find out and the creators are like, yeah, we actually decided we were going to make sure that she was in an environment constantly in shadows and darkness.
You're creating an atmosphere. And so it was feeding the atmosphere.
Yeah. So I think they did it intentionally because the hair is pretty phenomenal. It's like its own character, but we'll get there anyways. So today we're going to be talking about Brave, and this is from 2012, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
2012. I'm curious to find out what you have for story time. In terms of box office, this year was a good year for movies, I guess.
Okay.
You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Number one was The Avengers, the very first one.
Oh, the very first one. Wow. That feels like, guys, all of these movies we're talking about are 10 years old. These movies are a decade old.
Yep. They are a decade old.
Holy smokes. That movie. Okay. Here we go. Keep going. 10 years old.
The Dark Knight Rises.
I actually have still not seen that movie. Sorry. I saw the first two.
Hunger Games came in at number three. Skyfall number four.
Skyfall. Personally, one of my favorite James Bond movies. Maybe.
Twilight Saga Breaking Dawn Part 2. Just the title alone is just laborious. Amazing Spider-Man Brave comes in at number 7.
Mm-hmm.
The Hobbit An Unexpected Journey.
Oh.
But that was because it was released in like December.
Uh-huh.
Ted and then Madagascar 3.
There were some good I mean you almost hit on every little nerdy tribe out there, except for Star Wars. Yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah, so it was a pretty solid year. And there's a lot of, I mean, this is going to sound dumb, but variety, I suppose.
Yeah.
In the top 10.
Superheroes, hobbits, animation, random teddy bear that talks and is creepy and weird. I will say this. This is super random. I rewatched The Hobbit, The Unexpected Journey recently. Guys, that's a really good movie. Why is everybody so grumpy at that movie? Maybe they're grumpy because they made two more. The first one was great, and I had just read the book, and I rewatched that one. I was like, aw. Anyways, go watch that, guys. If you need some more fall vibes, that'll give you the vibes.
That does give you fall vibes. And that was a nice little commercial there for another podcast. So
another podcast.
So let's do some story time, Carrie.
Okay.
What else do you got for Brave?
Story time. Once upon a time, there was a movie, and its original title was The Bear and the Bow. That was the original title. When they announced this movie,
really?
It was called The Bear and the Bow. And it was like that up until like it wasn't like, oh, we released that this movie's coming out in 3 years, and then 2 months later, they're like, oh, we actually changed the name. I'm pretty sure it was like, they changed it like a year before they released it. So it was like pretty far into production. And then they changed it to Brave. Thoughts? Concerns?
When I watch this movie, the first thing I think about is not Brave.
So the title should be Coward.
No.
Or Not Brave.
Or Emotions.
Emotions.
Or, conflict.
Angst. Teenage angst.
Or could you just call it Merida?
Pride.
So, but I did not think, do you think of Brave? Like, do you think of like the word Brave? I like the title Brave. It's brief. It's a good word.
Yeah.
But I don't, at the end of the movie, I was watching this and I was like, wait, what is the connection to Brave? And there was, she had a line at the very end where she was trying to, I think they were trying to pull the title into it a little bit.
The very end. Maybe that's how far into production they were. They're like, guys, we got to come up with a new title and it's due out in a month.
So I didn't
do
realize
some voiceover at the end.
I didn't realize this until you brought that up though, but I just don't see Brave as the,
it's yeah, one of those things. It's been 10 years. So I feel like the title has sunk in enough that when we hear Brave, we think Merida and we're like, okay, yeah, it makes sense. But yes, then you watch the movie and you're like, oh wait.
Yeah.
Like, and so the pop culture has taken a hold of it, but the movie itself, maybe not.
How about reflection. This? You ready for this?
Okay.
We're going to switch titles of two movies.
Okay.
So Brave is going to be the title of Onward, and Onward is going to be the title of Brave.
Ooh, that's interesting.
I know Onward, like, what's his bucket? That's part of his
Yeah,
thing
he
his
loves
car.
To say Onward.
Yes, but I think the whole point of the movie is kind of about
See, but now it's too ingrained in there. So I can't see Brave is too ingrained in there.
For Tom Holland's character, that is a Brave.
I can't put Brave in front of Onward.
Yes, I get that.
Yeah. All right. But this is interesting. I don't know. Maybe we'll come up, we'll have some brainstorming and come up with some other possible titles. But the original title was The Bear and the Bow.
Okay.
B&B. The animators personally learned to do the fight photography for the fight scenes. They actually had like the swords out in like the guarded areas of Pixar and were out there. One of the directors whose job was to do the fighting scenes, he was insistent that they physically learn how to do it first and then they could go animate it because they would know what it felt like and they could film it so they could see what actual, like what actually getting hit with a sword, like what would that look like? Does
okay.
that make sense?
Yes. So they have like in the studio, they have like rooms with mirrors.
Yeah.
They showed this, I think in Frozen, the
mm-hmm.
making of,
mm-hmm.
where the guy was literally dancing like Olaf and trying to figure out the movements or
yes,
something like that.
Yes.
Yeah. So
because animators are like actors in animated movies. Their physical movement is all of
which
all
is
them.
Brilliant and amazing. And I have a lot of respect for that.
Honestly. So yeah, so they did film them and he was insistent that they don't just bring in stunt guys and film them so the animators can see it, but that the animators were doing it themselves so they could see it later, but also feel it and know what.
I did have concerns. I was like, I don't know if I would have graphic designers as your
They had some
models.
Video of it in like the making of that you can watch on Disney Plus, and some of them you are like, okay. They're like, you got these guys who like that's their life, right? Their medium is animation and their computers, and they're out there with this huge sword and he's like, hey, go hit the dummy, and they're like, ah,
little slap.
Yeah. Harder.
I can't pick up the sword.
But it is so charming and I love that, like, and they all felt kind of silly because they're like, we don't do this anymore. Like this, so they're all kind of like, okay. But once they like got into it,
being
it was
so
cute.
Being so embarrassed.
Yes, it's still a thing. But it was so cute, and I respect that.
They were probably mortified because there was a camera crew.
And so far out of their comfort zone, they're like, just tell me what you want me to animate.
Please don't record this.
Please don't record this. Okay, and then I have two more things. This one is like, I'm going to put a red flag next to. I don't know how accurate this is.
Good old
IMDb, always throwing in the facts that you're like, what?
Okay, so
you tell me what you think.
Okay,
on
yes.
a scale of 1 to 10, how accurate do you think this is?
I'm just thinking about the red flag piece, but anyway, go ahead.
The originally announced voice for Merida, they casted somebody, Reese Witherspoon.
Okay.
Does she have a Scottish accent in her? I don't know.
Maybe they watched her play June Carter and they're like, well, she could probably do Scottish, right?
She's Southern, so maybe did they ask her? They're like, we're announcing the cast, Reese Witherspoon. She's like, what? Anyways, clearly they
Or I wonder
they
if they were
the
gonna
right thing.
You know when they sometimes have the main character not have an accent?
That would have been in this movie, no, it would have been terrible. They did the right thing. They went with
Kelly MacDonald.
Yes, all of these actors who, one of them said that he was thrilled to participate because his entire acting career for like 2 decades, he'd had to use an English accent and never could use his natural Scottish. Is it Scottish? I'm pretty sure it's Scottish and not Irish. It's Scottish.
Yeah, it's Scottish. But I think us ignorant Americans, they could probably have Irish actors do it. And we'd be like, oh, that's a good accent.
Yeah, but
good
he was thrilled because he was like, I get to use my like native tongue that I get to speak when I'm around my family. So he was thrilled to like be part of it. So.
Well, I'm glad we could make a movie for you.
So here's the other one.
Okay.
Corbett, I need your opinion. I'm going to give you a list of movies. You tell me which one you think won for best animated film.
Okay, great. Here we go.
Frankenweenie.
What?
Wreck-It Ralph. Paranorman. Brave. And the Pirates Band of Misfits.
I don't even know what three of those are. Should I know what those are?
Paranorman and Frankenweenie. I'm assuming. You know what Wreck-It Ralph is.
I don't know what Pirates whatever thing
is. I didn't know what that one was.
I don't know what those are. I'm assuming because you're asking this question that it's Wreck-It Ralph that won.
Uh-huh.
Is that right?
It's actually Brave.
Oh, Brave won.
Brave won. That Brave beat Wreck-It Ralph.
I'm okay with that.
For best animated feature. Are you okay with that?
I'm absolutely okay with that.
Okay.
Are you a huge Wreck-It Ralph fan?
I'm actually not. But I need to watch it again. I haven't watched the second one.
I think the concept.
But I know a lot of people are. Like, I know Wreck-It Ralph's a huge deal and Brave is not. So.
Well, I think. This is where I get confused about these awards because visually, Brave is more
artistic.
Wreck-It Ralph is a more interesting concept. I think it's very creative.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what that means, how that plays, and maybe I'm going after two different things here. Maybe it's best story or whatever.
No, that's fair because it is hard to like keep track of who are these people that are picking these movies.
Yeah.
The Academy Awards are picked by, so when you win an Academy Award, you're put on the like Academy, you get to vote for the next Academy Award. So if you
win, it's like the Heisman Trophy.
Yeah, it's kind of like a Heisman Trophy. So if you're a winner, like within like the last however many decades, so they can fill all of the spots, then you get to vote. So yeah, these would be like actors and directors and.
I guess I should learn more about the criteria for the Oscars and.
I was honestly, okay. I will be honest.
I'm not surprised by that. I'm okay with
that. I was surprised.
Okay.
I was surprised.
Okay. Very good.
But we'll get into why in a second. Okay. So Corbin.
Yes.
Are you ready to move on?
Yes. Let's move on.
Let's move. Shall we?
Let's plug along here.
Move on.
To another commercial. Lord of the Rings. You know.
Guys, don't get me started on Rings of Power. I'm loving it.
Okay. Let's keep going.
So good.
All right.
Okay, we're not going to do character report cards today. I kind of pulled a fast one on Corbin. As I was getting ready for this, I was like, I just don't feel like character report cards is helping me any. And I have so much more to say than it's allowing me to say today. So I suggested that
Gabri's going to say a lot and I'm not going to say anything because
no,
I'm not prepared.
You're not prepared?
Well, you gave me a little bit of a heads up, but
you several hours. And then you showed up early and said, I have some preparing to do. Oh, my gosh. And then he went around and ate chips in my house.
In my house. My bed.
He just had a bag of chips and wandered around. Okay. So we're going to do a little bit of who gets paid. We haven't done this in forever.
We actually have a new name for it. I like this name better. I think this was really creative. And Carrie came up with this. So all credit to you.
Oh, thanks, guys. I had a creative moment.
Let's keep
today.
Building it up here.
So our new segment is called Money Makers and Money Takers.
Yes.
So we've got the group that they got paid and boy, did they earn it. They did great work. And you got the group that got paid, but you're like, oh, dear.
So just think back in college when you're doing group work and whatever, you have the couple of people that are really putting in the time and effort and stressing and anxious. And then you got that one or two other people that are kind of showing up to the meetings late, leaving early, not doing their part, but get the same grade. So we'll see what happens here.
Yeah. Okay. So, Corbin, I'm going to start. Let's start with money takers. You want to start up a negative or positive?
Let's start with positive.
Yeah, start with positive.
Yeah,
okay.
So money makers.
Money makers.
Who made the money?
Who made some money? For me, and P.S., this is like characters and the people who made the movie. That's why I needed to expand it.
Oh, even more. Okay.
Corbin, I put that in my text message. Okay. Corbin's not written.
I'm going to look this up.
Corbin's
my witnesses, those of you listening.
I said characters and the people who made the film.
It was a really long text. It was just, I was just trying to get through it. I'm in the middle of work and I'm getting all these texts about changing how we're doing everything.
I'm sorry. Oh my gosh.
Oh yes, that's right.
Yes.
So the first line, I have three to five characters or people who made the film. Skip that part.
It's okay. You're working. I guess.
Skip to the end.
You guys witnessed. Corbin doesn't always listen to me.
I don't read. I'm terrible at texting. I hate reading texts. So.
Yeah, texts are hard. Anyways. Agreed. Okay, here we go. Money makers.
Okay.
My first money maker. I'm going to give my money maker to Merida. The character of Merida. I think she is all that you want in a really awesome, strong, dynamic female protagonist. And I think she was done well.
Have I talked about this? Whenever we use the word protagonist, I think that's the bad guy.
Sorry, antagonist is the bad guy.
I know, but I just...
I'm so sorry.
They sound so similar. And pro is like the pro bad guy.
Okay. She's everything you want in a Disney heroine.
Is that right? So you're elevating her above all the other princesses?
Not above all of them, but I think she is like, she earned her money. She is the main person on the posters. She is like, she's the main girl, and she is great.
Her look, mm-hmm. her voice you mm-hmm. liked.
Yep.
Her attitude.
Yep.
The way she talks to her mom.
Yep. The way she is with her dad. Her relationship with her dad is so fun. She's got her sweet horse and her bow and arrow. She made her money.
Okay, so here's the descriptor from Wikipedia. Merida, an adventurous and virtuous 16-year-old princess who has been forced to be betrothed to strengthen the bond of a kingdom.
Okay, and now stop there.
That is where I was stopping.
That stopped there.
Period.
Here's my deal. I feel like that description, I'm in. I'm like, oh, this is going to be so good. 15 minutes in the movie, we take a right turn down
Wispy mother, Lane.
Down mother-daughter bicker lane, and we never come back to that premise you just read. So
wait.
I feel like they missed the boat. Merida was awesome.
Wait, betrothed to strength. So what do you want it to be? I'm confused.
I just feel like there was a lot of potential for this to be an actual, like, super adventurous, awesome thing where Merida could shine. And instead, we got dragged down into her, how she didn't get along with her mom.
I'm still confused, though. Like, what was the story supposed to be? Like, her, like, Jim Hawkins going out into the adventure to islands and like what are you looking for here?
I don't know. I just feel like she was limited by that you had this entire legend about Mordu you could have explored.
So you wanted to
you
kill
could have sent her out on a boat if she's betrothed. Maybe like she has to go out. I don't know. Like there are so many ways that you could have like let adventurous Merida be adventurous. Instead, we kind of got stuck on an okay plot of her and her mom. So that's my thing. So to be clear, Merida made the money. She did her thing. She did her best. I think that one of the money takers was the screenwriters. I think they kind of missed the boat on like the potential that this had, and they may have like taken a slight turn towards.
But from like a historical perspective, during this time period, it wouldn't make sense for her to be playing that role of going out on this grand adventure.
Okay, I'm not saying that's literally what they should have done. I'm just making the point. Okay, so for an example, one of the screenwriters was also the director, and she has this relationship with her 14-year-old daughter that is like this, where they don't get along about anything.
Great. That's playing out on screen.
I
awesome.
Know. I was kind of like, okay, so you had this director who like was like, oh, this piece of my life I wanted on screen, and it could have made like a good subplot, but I don't know that I want that entire thing to be the movie when you have a character like Merida who has so much potential to do so many like fun, exciting things, and then it just keeps getting dragged down by her mom who's like, doesn't care that she went and climbed a waterfall and is like, stop using your bow and arrow. You know what I mean?
I don't know. I think
like
it's
it could have been better if it had done something
it's
else.
It's a product of the time period, right? That was the tension, but the progressive side of it was that she actually pushed back and that her parents came around to
that. I just feel like
that
there are ways to make it more exciting.
Okay. Well, I need more examples. You've done this to me in the past. I need more help here with what it could have been. I'm open to it, but I just, we'll just leave it there.
Okay, so you go ahead. I gave you a money maker and a money taker.
Okay, all right. And first of all, with the 14-year-old, I don't think that helped the relationship at all. When they watched the movie for the first time, where they were like, hey,
and then the director,
this is
like,
why I made this multi-million-dollar
interviews
film.
And she's like, yeah, my daughter was the introvert. And you're just like,
oh,
oh
my gosh.
Gosh,
okay, you got issues. Okay,
it's okay, it's fine.
Okay, someone who helped make money for this film based on their performance and who they are. I like King Fergus.
Oh, he is the best.
I love that he is just, I love when Mordu comes out. With the very end, and he's like, I'll take you with my bare hands. I'm just like, the gumption on this guy is fantastic.
Yes.
And it is reckless, but at the same time, you have confidence. You're like, I think he could actually, could do this.
He could, you know what? I believe.
He lost a leg. He's lost a lot of other things, but you know what? I think he could wrestle this 20-foot bear to the ground.
Yes.
So I liked King Fergus a lot. And I also like that, he has this really intense side, but also most of the time when he's with his family and at home and stuff like that, it's just kind of more lighthearted and just like, I'm doing my thing, but I'm not really strict and stern about it.
He's just enormously passionate about whatever he does. And so that means that, like, if he loves you, he is passionate about loving you. And if he wants to make you laugh, he's passionate about making you laugh. And if he is going to protect you, he's passionate about that too. I agree with you. I think King Fergus was spot on. And I loved the... how he was kind of a little bit of a foil for the queen in that, like, he gets along with his daughter and he's like, you just got to listen to her. And she's like, well, I am listening and she's not listening to me. So I love this idea that you explore in this movie a little bit of a daughter and a father's relationship and how wonderful that relationship can be. Again, unfortunate that we got stuck on other things, but that I would have loved to have been like, let's take Merida and dad and go on an adventure. That would have been a party and a half.
But there's no character arc with that. It's just like, hey, we're just having a good
time. The queen can come too.
Okay, I can see where this is trending.
So,
right.
You go on, you go do something, and then you have that subplot of like the queen and Merida don't really get along, but the king is there to help too. Instead of making it the entire thing is the queen and Merida, and then occasionally she shoots her bow and arrow.
Okay. Okay, we're getting there. We're getting there. Okay.
Okay.
I can tell you're just itching to say some stuff about certain character.
I'm not itching to say anything.
So just really quickly, King Fergus, his voice.
Yes.
Bill Connolly.
Yes. I looked this up too. Yes. I recognize
Billy Bones.
Billy Bones.
From Muppet Treasure Island.
Oh, Jimmy Jim.
Yes, Captain.
Guys, Muppet Treasure Island, it is a gem.
So there you go.
He plays Billy Bones in that movie.
So anyways, King Fergus is a money maker. A money taker for me, I'm going to go with The Witch. I didn't get it.
Oh, you didn't like The Witch?
I did not get it.
Okay.
Is she a good guy or a bad guy? What's going on here? We have issues with this. You know I have issues with this.
Yeah, you don't like ambiguity.
Because it's almost... she's tricking people on purpose.
Tricksty.
She's like, you want a spell? I don't do spells. I'm a, what is she?
Wood carver.
Yeah, you're doing that little shtick. And then they want a spell all of a sudden. And as long as they're just very ill-defined, she's like, I'm all over it because I'm going to ruin your life. I'm going to take this a totally different direction. And I'm going to make this person into a bear. And I'm not even going to care about it. I'm just going to leave town and deal with it. And then in 50 years, I'm going to come back and I'm going to find somebody else that's unhappy with their life. And I'm going to make them into a bear or somebody else that they know into a bear. And I don't even care.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that.
Okay.
I want you to either be bad or good. And then I want there to be consequences for being naughty. And the witch did not experience any consequences. She's a naughty witch.
To be fair, she tried to like avoid.
It's a game for her. She's like the Joker. Okay, the witch
like
and the Joker on the same level.
No,
here.
They're not.
It's just a game. They just want to see the world burn, and they just want to see what happens.
What was happening? Oh my goodness, that's so funny though. I mean, I'm kind of middle road about the witch. I think she was underutilized.
I thought she was in it too much.
I think they
get out of here.
If they had spent more time with her, then you would have had less ambiguity about who she is. You know what I mean? Like, we need a little more clarity. But the way she was, I was okay with it. So I'm not.
What's her point?
About.
What's the motive here? Goofball?
She's just doing her thing.
The kid in the back
She's
of the classroom.
She's a wood
carver. Right? The kid in the back of the classroom doing stupid stuff. At least there's an audience for people to laugh
the
at.
The wisps.
The witch, it's just like, no one's watching.
The wisps led Merida to the witch to help Merida find her fate.
What are the wisps?
They're little blue things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But
glow.
What are what?
See, this is what I'm saying. Like the folklore and the mythology here, like
the culture stuff, I'm missing here.
Get us in there and make it nitty and gritty and exciting and adventurous. Not about mother-daughter relationship.
Well, I'm sure there's a cultural piece just to the wisps in general. The
it's
legends.
Just like Scottish folklore. Yeah.
Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, I'm okay with that, but I just didn't really. There wasn't. What, did they explain that? Did I miss it?
They really briefly. And this was interesting. I think they really briefly explained it. But then Mordu at the end, he turns into a wisp. I was like, what?
I don't know. Would you rather be Mordu or a wisp?
I don't want to be a wisp. They're
Why?
Cool.
I don't know. They lead you to creepy people.
No, not to creepy people. They lead you to things that make that help you grow and become better.
They lead you to what you most desire, which doesn't mean it's a good thing.
No, to your fate, which means that, like, for me, that means, like, things that help you grow and become better who you're destined to be, not what you want. It's leading you to what you need.
So now he's a wisp.
He's a wisp. So, yeah, again, like, okay. So much cool stuff that I feel like was kind of just relegated to the side.
They treated the wisps more like something cute and novel, mm-hmm. and they didn't explain the legend behind.
I want the
nitty-gritty. Maybe there's nothing there. Maybe there's
Get
maybe
me
the
in
Scottish
there.
Are like, it's a wisp. What else do I need
Guys,
to explain?
Guys, now
here?
I want to study Scottish folklore so I can know these
there
things.
There you go. Now it worked.
Nope.
The movie worked.
Nope.
Okay, so that was my money taker.
Okay,
kind of with the slash wisp.
Yeah, with
the witch
Corbin
slash
didn't
wisp.
Like the witch. It's fine.
They got in the way.
Okay, money makers. My next money maker is. The director who did the fight choreography that I mentioned before, what was his name?
This is a different director?
There's like three directors and like four screenwriters.
How do they do this? How do you work in that type of a
exactly.
situation?
Exactly. He was awesome and so passionate and was like in, like he was the right director for the job. And that fight scene, both fight scenes between the clans, so funny. And that's when you kind of get the oh, this is a fun Disney movie vibe. So I think that was balanced. Like you had some humor, but you also like had the story. And I loved, he did such a good job with the fight choreography. It was funny, but it was also like felt somewhat realistic and looked good. So yeah, I'm a fan. Good job, dude. You earned your money. You brought the clans and the tension between the clans to life.
So this is Mark Andrews that you're talking about here.
Mark Andrews.
And what other, I mean, he only directed Brave. He did a screenplay for John Carter.
Oh, that might have been the end for him.
Story supervisor for Ratatouille and The Incredibles. So this is the only movie he's directed. Interesting.
Yeah, and I think, as far as I understand, he was mostly just involved with that stuff. So other people were doing other things, and he was kind of very specifically working with the clans and the fighting and the action shots.
This reeks... Man, I don't know if that's the right word here, but
Ooh.
Of the Disney company saying, you haven't ever directed anything before, so we're going to pair you up with somebody that has. We believe in you and what you're trying to get at here, but we also want you to be combined with, what's her name, Brenda?
Mm-hmm.
Brenda Chapman,
mm-hmm.
who directed The Prince of Egypt and then directed Come Away along with Brave.
So she had a little more experience than him.
She had one movie experience that was 15 years before, roughly, mm-hmm. 10 to 15 years before. So if that's the case, that's too bad.
Well, I thought he did a good job for
no,
his job.
No, I think he did a good job. But it sounds like there was too many cooks in the kitchen here for what you were talking about.
So that's my money maker.
Okay.
My money taker. Is the director whose mother-daughter relationship was in question. Brenda Chapman,
yes.
I feel like she was a little too heavy-handed. And she was also a screenwriter, so she was very involved in the conception and the writing of this.
Yes.
She was too heavy-handed on insisting that her relationship with her daughter be on the screen in a Pixar movie. Now, they have done this previously. When we did Onward, the guy who directed and wrote Onward had that relationship with his brother and kind of wanted to do that brotherly thing on screen. But his dad did not die and it was a pair of pants that were running around. And like they made, he was able to take that seed and then build some action and adventure around it. I think Brenda Chapman was too heavy-handed with the mother-daughter relationship.
Well, this is something interesting. It says here that in 2008, she was announced as the director of the film. The Bear and the Bow. Making her the first Pixar female director. However, in October 2010, she was replaced by Mark Andrews.
Okay.
Following creative disagreements between her and John Lasseter.
Okay.
So it kind of sounds like this movie was a little bit of a drama mess.
Which we've talked about this previously. I think we would be surprised how much drama mess there is. But changing directors 2 years before your movie comes out.
Yeah. And this was...
It's pretty interesting.
This is from the LA Times too. So whatever. You know, they have some quotes here from people talking about the making of the story. But that's tough. That's tough to...
It's hard.
Especially when it's dripping with like personal drama. You know, you're just like,
well, I'm wondering,
how do I work with this?
That makes me curious about like, what was the original conception? If we got here, you know, like, was John Lasseter looking at, was it too heavy handed or was he like, we need to go a different direction? She's like, okay, well,
this is my daughter.
Yeah,
this
like
is
I
my
have
therapy.
This relationship. And John Lasseter's like, yeah, let's put that on the screen. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows? Okay. Anyways.
All right, so that was my next money maker, money taker, Corbin.
Okay.
Who else you got?
Another money maker for me. I liked Mordu.
You liked the big bear?
I thought he was quite intimidating. He's got arrows and all kinds of crud sticking out of him.
He had, what was that on his face? Because that arrow hit his head and like bounced off. I don't know what it was.
He has a steel face.
He does.
But I thought he was quite intimidating. It scared me pretty good.
He was up there with the bear from Fox and the Hound.
I'd like to see those two go at it.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know if the... Mordu, I think, he seems a little bit... Well, I don't know. It's just rage.
Yeah, he's just an angry bear.
Angry
there's,
bear?
There's a little...
That should be the name of the movie. Angry bear.
Angry bear.
So I liked that. And I also liked... I did like this part of the story where the guy wants to be the strength of 10 men. Like, I like the witch part of that.
Mm-hmm.
But the part with Merida where she's just like, I don't like my mom. And she's like, okay, let's turn her into a bear. It's just like, what?
Okay, so...
So I thought the motives, like, were very different from these selfish desires. And the crime... Wait, what is it? The punishment did not fit the crime.
The crime did not finish the punishment. The punishment did not fit the crime. Yeah.
Yes. I felt it was a little different, a little bit of a leap there.
Okay.
I guess the end result, though, so all we've done is reinforce the stinking witch, so now she's going to keep turning people into bears. Thanks a lot, Merida. Oh, jeez.
Oh, my gosh.
Pretty bummed out about this.
Okay, so this is interesting, because based off of what you just said, you were like, okay, I'm good with the witch when she's talking about strength of 10 men, and Mordu in this whole, like, he gets turned into a bear and their kingdom falls apart. And then you said, but as soon as Merida comes in and wants to turn her mom into a bear.
No, she doesn't want to turn her mom into a bear.
She wants to change her,
right? And I'm just
that's
like,
that's where it lost you.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you had all of this backstory and cool stuff over here. And then we went this direction and it was like.
So to me, it would be more appropriate to change the mom into like a lamb.
What?
Something.
Can we just forget the mom? Can we just get over the mom? Like,
she's a big part of this movie.
I know she's a big part of this movie, but does she have to be the main thing? So, for instance, you could have had a movie where maybe Merida's thing is that she's not brave. She's overly confident.
overly confident.
And hears about this legend and decides
like
she's going to go and find the bear and find this kingdom by herself. And gets in a lot of trouble and ends up figuring out
and dying. Because I don't think the bear's going to lock her up.
Not dying, but I'm just saying that there's another option here where, like, maybe, and then you have the mom kind of in the background, more like the dad, instead of being next. Does that make sense? I think there are ways to do this that are not what we saw.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. There's ways to do it. Okay.
Your next money taker.
Money taker.
Yes. Thinking deeply. Maybe you don't have any more.
I kind of don't. I mean, there was The Crow. There was The Young Macintosh. There was...
All those guys.
Oh, no, no. I got one. Okay. Oh, there it is. It's... I don't know how to say her name. Ilda Frazier? Ilda? Whatever. What? The busty woman.
Maud. Maudie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maudie was in my Money Taker, too.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Maudie.
There were two... Oh, wow. There's two people that played her character, apparently. I was reading.
All she did was scream.
It was, it was stupid. It was dumb. I'm sorry. She just, yeah, you're right. She just screamed. And there's, what was the point? She wasn't funny. Are we trying to add a little humor here?
Okay,
like, it was just annoying.
This is, I'm giving an award here. Maudie gets my Black Cauldron award because there is that scene in the Black Cauldron where the frog gets stuck between the woman's breasts.
Okay.
And we had the same sort of thing in this movie. And I'm like, hello, this is not the dark ages of Pixar. Like, it felt so out of place and so jarring to see in a Disney film. And we decided to bring it back in 2012 and have the little bear cub take a swan dive to get the key.
Yeah,
I was just like, this is out of place.
It wasn't Disney. It was that we had the kilts and the bums.
I'm okay with that. I was okay.
Oh, you're like,
I was okay because you didn't ever see anything.
No, you did. Remember?
No, he just.
No, when they tied the rope together to get off the tower. And then they're walking along without anything on the bottom. You're just like, oh, that's awesome. Way to go, guys.
To be fair, I was doing some grading while I was
watching. Oh, you missed that part?
So I missed that part. I thought you were talking about the part where you...
I watched that part twice because I couldn't see very well. I was like, what was that? And I went back and I was like, wait a second. Oh.
I thought you were talking about where he shows his
bum
and you can't see.
Well, that was just kind of dumb too. You're just like, okay, what are DreamWorks? Here we go. Okay.
Yeah. So there was some of this humor that I was kind of... And Maudie was kind of...
They were reaching. It's like they couldn't come up with any jokes. So there's like, well, let's show off some body parts here. Oh, boy. Okay. Great. Thanks.
Yeah. Maudie was a money taker for me, too.
She was probably the worst part of this film, in my opinion.
Wow.
She was bad. Like, there was nothing there. No value whatsoever.
Yeah.
It was like an object, right? Like this girl, this woman, servant, that is just an object that we're trying to laugh at.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, this is not funny, A. And B, I think I have more respect for her. But then the animators and the storytellers just ruined it. So,
yeah.
Anyways.
That's interesting. It's interesting that you can, that like as a viewer, you want to feel like you may not agree with all the characters, but you want to feel like you can respect them in some way. And like Maudie just totally got.
Nope.
Yeah.
It was like there was a 16-year-old or a 14-year-old that's like, I have a good idea for a character.
Oh, my gosh.
Great.
Yeah. So maybe, again, Maudie was mistreated by the screenwriters. That didn't go over well. Okay.
I'm going to give a moneymaker. Can I throw it in? Because I think this is going to be controversial.
Yeah, go ahead.
I liked Queen Eleanor.
So you think Eleanor's a moneymaker?
I think she's a moneymaker. I think she is really important to this movie.
Okay.
And I liked her a lot. I thought the change in her was more drastic and more impactful than Merida's.
I would agree with that. Here's the deal. I'm not saying she's not important because obviously she's at the center of the movie. And she and like her character arc, like you said, is actually more drastic. I'm just saying I think... The reason I'm giving her a money taker is because I feel like she took money from Merida. If Merida is your main girl, if she is, I mean, we're not going to watch a Pixar movie as with kids to watch a mom change, right? So Merida is the one that you're like,
why not?
Well, no. I'm saying like in a marketing standpoint, Merida is the one like you want young girls to come and watch Merida. She's on the posters. She's the one you want girls looking up to. She's it.
Yes, she is. She's there. Her hair.
And
yes.
You don't want your main person to be hair. That's it.
No, that's not it. There's growth there. I like both. I like this idea of mom and daughter having issues because that's very common.
Yes, it is.
That's a thing.
It is.
And the way that they portrayed it was a thing because mom was saying, this is the way we do things. And the daughter saying, I'm breaking tradition and ruining everyone's lives. You know, obviously that's not, yeah. But, so I think it's very real and I liked it.
Did you like it enough for this movie in terms of excitement and adventure and plot? How? See, I feel like this is a question will come up later.
Okay, let's talk about it later.
Okay, okay. Queen Eleanor. Here we do.
Here we do. I like her. You don't.
No, I liked Queen Eleanor. I think I was anticipating. I don't remember feeling this when I went and watched this in theaters originally. Because the trailers looked so cool. Merida looked amazing. And I was like, oh man, this is going to be so exciting. And then it was about a mother and a daughter kind of ambling through the trees together. One was a bear. And I kind of didn't care because I wanted it to be Merida being amazing or being really adventurous. And I just, so the only reason I think they did great with Eleanor and they did great with her was that the story I wanted from this. No. So it was okay with what they did, but it wasn't what I wanted. Okay. And I feel like they, maybe I need a sequel where I can see Merida like be awesome.
Kick booty.
Yeah. Like go send her out to go learn something on an adventure by herself.
This is sounding more like Game of Thrones, which I have not seen, but I kind of have picked up some little bits and pieces. So she's like out there.
I don't need her fighting an army and like doing all that stuff. I think there's lessons Merida still can learn. And I think a lot of the lessons she needs to learn don't have anything to do with her mom. And I think there are ways for her to learn them. Figuring stuff out in more in a different setting.
I don't know. I think it.
But anyways, Eleanor, the only reason she's a money taker for me is because I feel like I just it wasn't. It was OK. It was pretty well done. But it was also like very in my face that like, OK, we're going to work through this situation. You're right. Like her character arc was really good and probably more emotional than I think Merida's. Merida's character arc kind of fell flat in the end because the mom's was so well crafted. So again, like not only did she take money from Merida, but I feel like she took the thunder and everything else.
Here's, can I bring up something?
Yes.
I think this is important. I liked Merida's, the change because she does something really stupid, which is take on a spell that you have no idea what it is.
Yeah.
Just change my mom, right? Very young thing to do.
Yeah.
Right? I think that's very, we could probably all resonate with that. Creates a mess, turns her mom into a bear, almost gets, her dad almost kills her mom.
Which is one of the most interesting parts of the movie.
And then her mom, well, before that, her mom is like, starts doing the miming thing to like help her, which I thought was kind of fun and creative. But so Merida's getting what she wants, even though she's been doing stupid crud the whole movie, she's getting ultimately what she wants, which is her mom is changing and letting her do what she wants.
Yeah.
And then at the very end, I think Merida realizes, holy crud, I did all this stuff, killed my mom, and I miss you and I love you and I don't want to lose you. So I liked that piece because it kind of had the different layers there where you didn't really feel like Merida was learning any lessons until the very, very end.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought that was good. So there you go.
No, that's good. I agree.
Okay.
I mean, in terms of like story structure and character growth, like there, it's here. It just, anyways, yeah.
Okay. Anybody else?
Did
you like the Lords?
So I just, the only ones I have left are, in terms of moneymakers, are like the Lords and then the landscape designers and the hair designers. Like this movie is visually stunning. And I think they earned their due.
Well, to the point of like best picture, animated picture, right?
Yeah, I think they're the ones that I think won them that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like this is very artistically, it just is a mood. And I love things that are moody. And I love it. Okay, so you want to talk about the Lords.
No, I don't have anything else. I was just saying you had more moneymakers and I was the Lords were basically it. So I thought they were fun. They were little side characters. They brought some interesting tension between, I think it's just a bunch of dudes that are being dudes, you know, where we hate each other
alpha
and then
male,
we're like,
who's
we're good.
Be,
and,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought it was fun. What about the, did you like care about the triplets at all? I thought they were a little bit like kind of on the fence of like, it could have been kind of annoying. I don't really care, whatever. I like kind of like the relationship between them and Merida. Where she like asks him to do things and they have like a little bargaining chip going back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I was just like, whatever.
Yeah, they were just
so,
kind of there.
Yep. So,
all right, let's go to rate the reviews to see what the internet thinks about this movie.
Okay.
Because Corbin and I, we're not split completely, but we're a little bit split on some things. So I will go first because I have several.
Okay, I've got three, so.
Yeah, I've got five.
Five. Threeve.
Threeve. Okay, my first one is from David K. 2 stars. Brave is a Pixar movie that tries desperately to be an action-packed adventure, but is limited to a mother-daughter drama, a coming-of-age story. This is why I picked this
review. Did you write that one?
Nope. This is why I picked this review, because I watched this movie yesterday, and the last, 24 hours, I've been like, how do I feel about this movie? And I couldn't articulate what it was. I was like, I liked it, but something felt like it was missing, and I don't know what it was. Thank you, David, for articulating that. That helped me be like, that's what it was. I feel like we missed an opportunity, and I wanted the movie to be something that it wasn't. And so, yeah, I somewhat agree with you, David. I think maybe they marketed it wrong. I don't know. I don't know what we did. I just feel a little disappointed.
Okay. All right. I'm going to go with my first review. Ian from a year ago. He says, this is 3 out of 5 stars. It's just okay. But the fact that it beat Wreck-It Ralph makes me mad. So I think that resonates with many of the people that you were talking about that really like Wreck-It Ralph.
It's kind of like, not a cult classic, but it is one of like, it's like Big Hero 6. It's very different for Disney Animation, and it really hit with a lot of people. Brave just kind of, I feel like, was that like subpar movie that kind of came out and people were like, okay, that's cool. I don't ever remember people being excited about Brave.
I definitely didn't watch it when it came out. It was at least 5 or 6 years after it came out before I first watched it, but kind of got lost in the shuffle there.
Yes.
I had some competition there with Avengers, Dark Knight. And at the same time, I was like in college graduating. So that's probably another reason why I did not watch this Disney.
Whatever, Pixar.
I want to watch Batman.
Because I'm an adult.
Yeah.
Obviously. PG-13 or nothing.
This should have been PG-13. The nudity.
Between the nudity and the violence, I mean, you're right. Maybe this was Game of Thrones. I'm just kidding.
That's where Game of Thrones came from. They're like watching this like, I think we could do this better. I've got an idea.
Okay, my next review is from EJ, 2.5 stars, doesn't do enough to break the princess mold and feels more Disney than Pixar. The plot is thin. Seems like the whole thing could have been avoided if she had just talked to her dad. Okay, so do you feel like this movie feels like Disney or Pixar? That's an interesting...
Well, I think that's the point, right? This is one of the more Disney-Pixar movies there is, because it's a Disney princess, but it's Pixar.
Right.
So that kind of makes sense to me.
I would agree. So we've been doing this Pixar like sorting thing where we have like our really deep thinking philosophical Pixar films.
Sorting.
And our action.
Gryffindor.
Yeah, we're going to do the sorting hat. And the action adventure Pixar films. Where would you put this?
Action adventure.
Straight across?
Yeah, why not? Yeah. What was the other option?
The deep, like, philosophical ones.
Oh, no. This is definitely action-adventure.
This is action-adventure.
Yeah. This is not, like, Inside Out or...
This is more like The Incredibles.
Coco. It's not that. No. It's, yeah. Okay. It's kind of swish, swish, bang, bang.
No, maybe swish, swish. I don't know about the bang, bang.
Oh, you know, the swords hitting each other.
Okay. So, I would... Yeah, this is very...
It's just funny to me because it's more Disney than Pixar. It's like, yeah.
Do you think it's because it's a princess? Like, it's like that traditional European princess vibe. So that's what gives it that
Disney
feel.
Yeah, this is not a Pixar move.
And it's more like folklore and like Grimm's fairy tales feeling rather than... Okay. Yeah, like I'm trying to think of Pixar.
Like Toy Story, right?
Yeah, or like The Incredibles where it's just like superheroes.
It's just a story. You know, this is more like historical. It's more...
So it's more grounded...
Royalty
in like historical stuff that is tangible to us.
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting. Okay,
my next review. This is from Lorraine. Thank you, Lorraine, for chiming in 2 years ago.
She chimed in 2 years ago.
Well, we were doing a podcast.
We've been saving it.
They were just like, I'm going to type this because I know in 2 years from now they're going to review this
need
bad
it.
Boy. And I'm curious what you think of Lorraine's viewpoint here.
Okay,
ready? Disgraceful portrayal of female independence, role model not. rude, self-centered, aggressive, disrespectful character, awful, disgraceful destruction of animated animals, frogs on sticks, really, hacking at a dead bear for target practice, seriously disturbed by this awful movie, watching with grandchildren tonight, shame on you, Pixar. So my point is, disgraceful portrayal of female independence, not a role model, rude, self-centered, aggressive, disrespectful. Would you say that Merida is those things?
Yes, but aren't we all? Like, do you want a? So is this? We want our female role models to be. I'm gonna go out on a limb here, and I'm gonna assume that Lorraine, she has grandkids, so she is an older generation where you want your female role model to be a little more like the Cinderella-esque, right? Very poised and graceful and soft-spoken and respectful. I'm okay with Merida because she's a teenage girl and it's like a realistic teenage girl.
Well,
that doesn't mean she's perfect. Means she's a mess, but she's realistic.
It's a 2000s teenage girl.
Yeah.
Right.
I would. Yeah. Up until like the 1970s, I think teenage girls may not have looked like this. But then you have the 1970s where there's a little more loosening of the corset strings and people are a little more like, wait, I'm...
I don't think they had corsets. Did they have corsets
no,
in the 60s?
No, they didn't have not in the 50s? 60s. But they had plenty of other stuff.
Yeah.
Girdles and...
Well, so here's the...
So I think this is more of a generational gap.
Looking at Belle and Ariel. Ariel in particular was kind of pushing back against these ideas of her dad. Belle was just being herself, which I think is really interesting. I think that's maybe why we like Belle a lot,
because
it's not like this, like sword in hand, like fight against the institution, right?
Yeah.
But it's just kind of like I'm just gonna do my thing. I'm gonna be myself. Pocahontas, who's just loving life, you know, in nature, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of variety here, and then Merida seems very hardcore. Like I'm just gonna be very outspoken. And just,
which is good because there are girls out there like that.
Yeah. So
we want a spectrum. We're comparing here, right? Yeah.
So I could see how some people would look at Cinderella and just that would make their skin crawl. Like, oh my gosh, how can we show this to our children? That is so old fashioned. But then people, you jump ahead to Merida, where it's like, oh my gosh, this makes my skin crawl because how could you be so outspoken, especially to your mom or your dad, that you should be very respectful towards.
Yeah. So I think the point is like for at least the first like 50 years, well, not 50 years, probably like first 30 or 40 years of Disney animation, you had one cardboard cutout version of what a female character looked like for the most part. Pretty, and like as we described, the more Cinderella-esque character. Then you hit the 90s and we start getting some different views of what people can look like. You have Pocahontas who defies her father and saves John Smith. Then you start having Mulan who defies her father and to save him and becomes and like takes on the persona of a man to fight in war. And then so you start having more of a spectrum where it's like, okay, you can have the soft spokens. But then you can also have these types of girls too, and you can have this kind of strength, but also this kind of strength.
Here's a question.
So it's good to be well-rounded.
Can I have a question? This is my question.
Yes. Okay.
Can we ever go back to a soft-spoken princess, though?
I think you can.
Is that ever going to be okay to go back to?
I think you can if it's done correctly.
Okay. See, that's
the
thing.
In the sense of if it feels genuine and like this is her genuine personality,
not like
this is a cardboard cutout of like the perfect woman, but it's like she's just shy and kind of more introverted and like that's okay.
I don't know if we ever can. I don't know if it'll ever be accepted. I don't know if we'll ever go that route.
Like I said, it depends on what the kind of story they give her and how she interacts with her story. If she is the type of, I don't think we can go back to a female protagonist who is very passive and just lets life happen to her and never really interacts with it much. I don't know if we can go back to that.
Like you're saying Snow White?
Or like Sleeping Beauty.
Oh, let's stay with Snow White. Sleeping Beauty is very unique. Like that's just, she didn't do anything. Like, there's just,
literally slept.
She slept
her
in
movie.
It, right? Yeah. So I'm curious, like, can we ever have a Snow White princess or character that is the lead and not, again, not exactly Snow White,
yeah,
but can we have a modern version of Snow White? I think that's actually a really interesting storytelling challenge.
Yeah.
Well, to see if we could do that in a way that people are like, oh, this is okay. Because I believe there are a lot of people out there that they don't want to be the, you know, chest pounding individual.
Agreed.
That's,
yeah,
like, hey, look at me. I'm going to.
Bella's very introverted.
So I think there's something interesting with that.
Bella's very introverted. I would actually say I think like maybe a modernized type of Snow White, I would say, would be Rapunzel. Someone who is like very kind of pure and innocent to the world. And just kind of like sees the world through like rose colored lenses and isn't like hardened, you know? And she maintains that positive outlook despite the struggles. And she does have her ups and downs as Snow White does, but there is that like more of like a gentle spirit,
yeah,
about Rapunzel.
The reason why I'm asking this, and we'll move on here, we've been spending a lot of time with this, but I think it's interesting.
No, this is a good conversation to have about Merida.
But there's a book that came out. You know Susan Cain. She wrote,
yes,
the book Quiet.
Yes.
She wrote
that book.
Recently, she wrote a book called Bittersweet.
Have not read it yet, but I'm planning to.
It talks about how oftentimes we're so focused on positivity,
mm-hmm,
that we look down upon or avoid any type of negativity or bitterness and stuff like that in the way,
yeah,
we portray our lives. And she's talking about how there's power and strength in the bittersweet, right? And I think it's a really interesting concept. And so I guess that's just something that's kind of been on my mind lately about this idea of an introverted lead that's not always positive,
mm-hmm,
that connects with the introverted, quiet, kind of a little bit more, not grumpy, but just...
realistic.
Yes, realistic.
More
is a good
realistic.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think that's an interesting concept. And, yeah, I think that'd be a real big challenge for a Disney or a studio to take that on to see if we could do this in a way that resonates with people.
Okay, can we play this game for a second?
Yes.
Guys, the only reason I'm going to keep spurring this on is because I genuinely think like this is a really good topic to talk about with Merida, because you're right. Like, she is, I can't think of another Disney princess that's like her. She's in her league all on her own. So let's go realistic and idealistic. Do you know what idealistic is?
Explain it, please.
So
I could probably
another way to say this that's a little more negative would be like you have pessimistic and optimistic. But
oh yeah, yeah. Idealistic is like you're seeing the ideal and everything.
Yes.
Like this is what could happen.
Yes. So you're more like, yeah. So but then you have realistic, who is like, this is how the world is and I'm seeing it how it is. Which is good. We need that.
Yes.
So let's go through a few Disney princesses and you tell me which category you'd put them in. Would you say Tiana is an idealist or a realist?
She's an idealist.
You think she's an idealist?
Yeah, she's all about like, these are my dreams and I'm going to go get them and like, I'm going to earn this money and like, no one's going to stop me.
Okay. Would you say Mulan is an idealist or a realist? Mulan's hard.
We haven't done Mulan yet, so we can go to that movie later.
I know. Mulan is hard because she never is like the I have a dream type of person. She's just like, I'm flat out protecting people.
Well, and she's also like, I don't fit into this.
Yeah.
So she's trying to be a realist because of that idea of honor,
mm-hmm,
and respect.
Mm-hmm.
But it just doesn't fit for her. And so she ends up going, we need a sequel to Mulan.
We
and
do.
Not like like the one that they did. But one that's actually like looking into what does Mulan really want? Because we never got that.
She wants to protect her family, but you never actually get into beyond her family. What
Mulan
want?
Yeah, like what's in it for you? Which is, I think there's a cultural thing there that's,
mm-hmm,
hard for us as Americans to kind of understand. So anyways. But
okay, my last one is, would you say Elsa is a pessimist, a realist or an idealist?
I don't care. No, I have a hard time with Anna and Elsa.
I'm trying to pick more like serious,
serious
Disney princesses to see if like their tone.
I think Elsa, initially when you meet her, I think she's a realist.
Okay.
Because she's like,
this, I feel like
I
this is a good conversation to continue
and
having like a bonus episode.
And I think that's Elsa because she's just, it's been drilled into her and there's so much trauma there.
Yeah.
That she has to just worry about like, this is life. it's dark, it's scary.
Yeah.
And she's trying to get out of that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I just, whatever. I gave it an attempt. All right. I tried.
Okay. So this leads into a review that I have from Rich.
Rich.
Because we're talking about like what types of things are Disney princesses are showing and speaking to the world, right? And that one lady was like, this is a terrible example.
Disgraceful.
Rich, 3.5 stars. He says, I would like to introduce my guest analyst, my granddaughter, who turned 7.5 today. Her name is Addie, and this is her take on Brave. Quote, I thought it was really cool. The first time I watched it, I thought, I want to be like her. And I'm just really glad that she did what she wanted to, and she went on an adventure. Now, I think there are parts of that that your reviewer would be like, you don't want to be like Merida. Please don't be like Merida. But I think, like, I like, because they make these movies for kids. So I liked having a review that was like, what does a little girl think of Merida? And she's like, I see her having an adventure, and I want to do that too. And I think that's like a really pure place for a 7.5-year-old to be. You're like, okay, Merida's different, but she's good.
Okay, this is good. I like this because I think adults just ruin Disney movies.
Yes, we do.
We ruined it.
Guys, if we ruined Brave, Addie just saved it for us.
The complexities and all this analysis is just getting into these like deep places where it's like, just let it wash over you like we talked about.
Yeah, so Addie is saving this because I've been a grumpy pants about it. But
yes, you
Addie looked up to Merida and was like, I just want to be like her. Okay. And I want to go on an adventure. And I think that is a beautiful thing.
And then she fell asleep after the first 15 minutes.
Yes. Yes.
Grumpy pants here, right here. B.
Okay,
my last review. This is from EM. This is from a year ago. 5 out of 5 stars. I watched this with my mother, and it reminds me so much of our relationship. We have our ups and downs, but we're super close, and we'll always love each other deeply. My mom's the best, and I really don't deserve her.
Oh, that's cute? So sweet.
I like that.
So sweet.
Because that's this book, bittersweet, right? We have ups and downs, but we're still close. We still love each other. Yep. We don't agree on everything.
Yep.
But we appreciate each other. Yeah. Or hopefully her mom understands that, right? And so I think that's a great sum up.
I feel like I'm really curious now, like what the original iteration of this movie was going to be before they changed stuff around. Because I'm wondering if John Lasseter was like, there's not a soul to this and it's too much one thing and we need a lesson. We need to learn something. We need something in here that's going to give this some depth. And I wonder if that's when they decided to go to the relationship aspect, because like that right there, right? That's very relatable to have a rough relationship with a family member and then to have it healed. And so maybe that was what the chord they were going for. Cause it is a,
but it was the Brenda that was the original director. And that was her story.
Maybe, but I don't know when they brought that in. Maybe they brought that in after they told her, we got to change things.
Well, that's when she left. So she left.
Maybe it was a little too much. Because I'm sitting here thinking, like, you put this in the adventure version of Pixar. And I'm like, yeah, from the outside, yeah. Like, it's definitely not the other category. But it's not completely The Incredibles either. The Incredibles, I don't know. The Incredibles is, I'm looking at The Incredibles now, I'm like so masterfully done because it is action adventure, but it has that family tie all the way through where you're dealing with the relationships along the way that gives it that depth.
Mm, yeah. Okay.
So I'm saying like, I think The Incredibles balanced that better than this one did. Okay. My last review, Jenna L, 2.5 stars. Just get this. Well, I mean, we've said this a billion ways. Jenna will say it again. Merida is one of my least favorite Disney princesses, or at least her story is one of my least favorites. She herself is independent and good at archery, which is really dope. But the main plot of the story doesn't focus on her. It's all about her mom getting turned into a bear. So there are a couple people out there who see that. But then we also have Addie and your reviewers who are like, I really connected with it. So it's very split. Polarizing movie. All right. Any final words before we do awards?
No, let's do it.
Go for it, Corbin. I already have 2 awards, and I already gave one of them out. Black Cauldron Award went to Maudie.
Okay, my first word, I kind of already gave it out already, but it's the Nude Award for Pixar. I'm hoping that this is the limits of nudity in Pixar and Disney films, but it was a little startling, let's say.
Lots of body humor.
Yes, yes. Oh, more than God. You'd usually expect.
Oh, gosh.
Do you want me to give another one?
Yes, please
okay.
do.
This is the... Relationship Advice Award.
Okay.
I've found it very interesting how when the queen was a bear, they couldn't communicate very well. And that was a gift because Merida was doing all the talking and it was frustrating at first, but eventually you get to a point where when one person's doing the talking, somebody has to listen.
Yeah.
Right? And so I liked that moment there where you started to see a little bit of a shift. And it wasn't necessarily that the queen just started listening and she was the only one changing. But I think Merida started to realize that she was kind of talking a lot and just saying things and emotions. And so sometimes in a relationship, and I'm learning this very slowly, sometimes when you're having a discussion about something you feel very passionate about, one person has just got to stop talking. And start listening, and then the other person realizes, oh, you're listening and validating, I can do the same, and then you kind of go back and forth to validate instead of just talking at each other. And so I like that in this moment. I think that was a very unique gift, and I don't know if that was the intention, but I think that it added something to the story that was a little
bit more
good.
Deep. I like that. I will add this. I feel that Eleanor was just as terrible at listening as Merida was.
Oh, yeah, they both were.
They were both so bad at it.
Yeah.
Because Eleanor didn't want to hear anything that didn't have to do with, like, being the prim, proper princess.
Yeah, that's, like, parent-daughter. Like
yep, and Merida didn't want to hear anything that had to do with prim, proper princess.
Yes.
And like I said, I really love that we got to see Fergus be the one who was, like... I mean, he's kind of a spaz, and he's kind of, like... He looks like he's, like, this really hulking, hardened male-type figure in her life, but he's actually the one that, like, he connects with his daughter, and that's such a cool thing to see. Because usually... Here's a point for you, Corbin. We have these Disney movies where one or both parents are missing. We got both parents in this movie. Woohoo! Seriously. Yeah. So you got to see, and it was fun to see Fergus talk to Eleanor and him be like, I know you're not connecting with her like I do, but you got to listen to her. You know what I mean? Like, it was fun to get to see all of the different parts of the family and how they work individually and together in different ways rather than just, I don't have a family.
Yeah,
or it's just me and my mom.
And I think both relationships have to got to work, you know, like just Merida and her dad connecting wasn't going to result in positive development of Merida. There has to be a moment of connection with her mom. And so I think the king was helping her along and keeping her in kind of moving along, and that connection is important. And I'm not saying you should always be connected with both parents equally at the same time.
I think it's more about synergy between all of the, like having the both of the parent, like having the message be like somewhat consistent between the two. Cause he was kind of more like, let's make a joke out of the princess thing. And the mom was like, the princess thing is life. And she was naturally connecting more with her dad because he saw things the way she did. But once you got kind of the dad and the mom are like, okay, let's both give a little and meet in the middle and create a message together that will help Merida, I think that helped a little bit too. Anyways. Okay.
There you go.
My last award. I don't even believe in the name of this award, but I hope Corbin gets it.
Oh, boy. I'm being put on the spot.
The name of this award is more for Corbin. I have my Jennifer Lee Award.
Oh, yep. I was thinking about that earlier, and I didn't want to bring it up because people would be like, "Oh my gosh, obsessed much?"
Oh yeah, I guess we could have called it the Frozen 2 Award.
If she would have been involved in this movie, I would not have been surprised. I'd been like, "Okay, I can see it. I can see it." Right?
I think maybe it's more accurate like the Frozen 2 Award. So much potential, but so much confusion about what are we doing. No, this one goes, I would say this is more for the so many directors and so many screenwriters involved, and just this like muddled pot of like who is in charge and what is happening. Kind of got that same tone from Frozen 2. You kind of get it from this movie.
Yeah, I can kind of see that.
Too many cooks in
a
the
little
kitchen.
A little bit of drama in the production. Just as a side note, Jennifer Lee was involved with Wreck-It Ralph that year. She was one of the writers. So there you go.
And I think Jennifer Lee does a great job being a creative director. Like, I just, for whatever reason, Frozen 2 was a struggle. And sometimes you have struggles. But I think she does great work otherwise. All right. Those are my only awards.
This is not really an award, but I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
How would you have fed your mother the spell cake? I would have felt so guilty. I couldn't have put together like this nice spread on this tray for her like Merida did.
Uh-huh.
She was really gung-ho about really changing her mom. I would have like had to snuck it into another cake or something, you know, like mix it in like with another, the batter of something
did
else.
Have you ever been that mad at someone?
Where I've tried to like poison them?
No,
basically.
But like you just wanted them to change so badly that that felt relatable in any way. Have you ever been that mad at somebody?
That's why with Merida, it's so reckless. It's hard for me to connect with that.
Mm.
I just want someone to change. It's just like, for me, it was, no, I just withdraw. I just go away from people. I don't want to be near them. Right. So this idea, I think some people are different in that way, that they want to make people change, and mm-hmm. other people withdraw, and they're just like, you know what? You just stay in your lane. I'll do whatever the bare minimum, so I don't have to create the drama and listen to you harp on me. But then I will also just avoid you at all costs.
Mm.
I think that's my approach.
You must have a really, guys, no one is going to understand what I'm saying, but it's fine. You must have a really strong 9 in your personality. Because 9s, Enneagram 9s are, I do too. I'm the same way where it's like, we avoid conflict. We're like, I just don't want to have to deal with the conflict.
It's easier just to get away from the drama.
Where some people are like, we are resolving this at all costs.
And you're going to do what I want.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're more
that
like.
That freaks me out.
The way
that's
we.
Just like, are you kidding
the
me?
The way we control.
I think that's an introvert kind of approach.
Where the way we control our environment is we leave.
Yeah.
Where some people are like, I'm not leaving, which means you need to change.
Which, I mean, that is so bizarre to me. Like, it blows my mind that people are like that. And if you are like that and you know me, and please come talk to me, because it's just like fascinating to me that you think that's.
But both
okay.
are problematic. Like,
oh, yeah,
super
they're both
problematic.
Issues, but I definitely see my side much stronger than that
that's
side.
Because that's who he is.
My way's right, and I'm just going to withdraw now.
This is the problem when you get opposites.
You should
right?
change, but I'm leaving now.
Problem is when you have.
When I come back later, if you haven't changed, you have problems.
The problem is when you have somebody who is like, see, with Merida and her mom, they're both very similar, right? So they're both like, you will change. I'm not leaving until you do. Problem is when you get somebody like Corbin and a Merida, where Corbin is trying to leave and the Merida just is like, no, we're fixing this.
That sounds
like
King Fergus,
you.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Corbin, we got to rank this.
Okay.
Are we doing our special scale?
Let's do our special scale real quick, okay? We'll fly through this. Music?
You know what? I'm going to give music a solid 3.5.
Wow, 3.5. I give it a 2. It's kind of forgettable. It's nice. It's cool. It adds to the movie, but
singing,
I can't remember
the
it.
The singing songs are very nice. I like them a lot.
Okay, characters. Ugh. Oh, boy. I'm going to give it a 4.
I'll
I actually
three.
Really liked the characters. There was only the witch that was a dingus, and then What's Her Bucket, and they were both in there for like less than 5 minutes.
I'll give
so.
It a 3. Okay. I was fine with a lot of stuff you struggled with, but there was just too much put on the
Maudie, whatever.
Maudie, yeah, and the mom.
Okay, story. This is going to be interesting.
Oh, geez. I mean.
I'll give it a.
I'm going to go 2.
3.
2. They missed the mark. I really do think they missed the mark.
Okay, all right. Art.
Oh, this one is more like a 4.
I'll give it a 4.5.
Yeah, 4.5. Give me 4.5. I got to keep up with you on that one.
Okay.
It is so pretty.
Magic moments. Disney magic moments.
You know what? I actually.
Did this one get you? A little emotion?
Did
a little
it
tingle?
Get you? When she is riding her horse and that song is playing, that's like the theme song of Brave. So good.
Full
and it's
Jim
like,
Hawkins.
And
you're
it's
expecting
super
Jim Hawkins
beautiful,
to play
through? And she's like doing her thing and it's Merida being in her
and
moment.
Doing her thing.
I loved it. That gave me the chills. And at the end, when the same type of music is playing and she's with her mom on the horse, and it's really beautiful. Same type of feeling. So I think there is a magic moment. I'm going to give you I'm gonna give it a 3.5 because I didn't remember that there was, but there is one, and it snuck up on me.
Yeah, I liked it when the mom turned back into mom, and they're hugging each other and they're looking at each other. I thought that was a really tender moment. The other moment that it really startled me and I was like, "Whoa, this is tense," is when they're running. She's riding on the back of her mom as a bear, and they're running away from Mordu, and there's the shadows, and they're going through the fog. I was like, this is creeping me out. I don't remember. Does Mordu just jump out of the fog here and attack and kill everything?
Oh.
I don't think that's what happens because it's a Disney movie, but I was still a little
tense
there. That's
cool. The atmosphere they created was
so
getting to you.
I'll give it a 3.5. Some things I forgot, but there was some magic in there. Okay. Nostalgia.
We'll
get a 1.5.
2, because I did see it in theaters. And so I remember some of my impressions about it, but none of them were like super lasting or positive.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
I think so. I was counting while you were doing that. So I think I ranked it as a total 19 out of, again, I always forget how to add up a 19 out of 30. And Camry, you came up with a lot of half numbers. So we've got
per usual
10.5, 14, 15, 18.5.
18.5.
So I scored it higher by 1.5.
So 18.5 out of 30 is like a C minus.
Well, we'll see.
Right? In percentage wise? Okay.
Something like that.
All right, Corbin, we got to rank this.
Okay. All right, go for it.
Oh, geez. Okay.
You're up.
I'm giving this a number 37. It's below Pinocchio, but above The Rescuers.
Ooh, Camry.
There is some really good parts about this, but I just sit and look at this movie and I just see what could have been. And
I almost typed down Merida as the name.
And
that
Merida
should be the name.
Yeah, you should have. Ultimately, this comes down to rewatchability. The way this movie is now, I would rather watch Snow White again. There's more nostalgia there. Yeah.
Oh, boy. People aren't going to like this.
Sorry, team. Maybe I don't understand it. Will you guys help me understand? And then maybe, yeah, I need help. Help me like this movie. That's all.
You know what? I'm going to go number...
Orban's changing as we're sitting here.
No, I don't ever like nail this sucker down until I actually say it. So I'm going to go with a 34.
Okay.
34.
You made me feel like an atrocious villain, and then you go 3 above mine?
I didn't make you feel nothing. That was yourself.
Like Camry.
That's your own issues there. No, I was kind of making noises because I was looking at my list. I got Pinocchio, Finding Nemo, Little Mermaid, Zootopia. I was like, what do I do with this? So I put it just below Onward. I think Onward is a little more entertaining.
Yeah.
But it does kind of have the same like little unique family story thing going on there.
Yeah. I think Onward and Brave could maybe have their own category of Pixar film.
Yes. And then just above Pinocchio. I Pinocchio is real cute, real fun.
But it's real creepy.
I just don't know if I'll pick it up and watch it.
Yeah. That's a good point. Now that you're saying that, like part of me is like, it should be above Pinocchio, but we can keep it where it's at for now.
Okay.
But right. Yeah.
So there you go. There's our review of Brave.
Guys, I wanted to like this movie more. I did.
I liked it. I thought it was good.
It was okay. It wasn't anything special.
It was good. It was good. There's a lot of movies we've reviewed, so it's just got something's got to be toward the bottom. So I liked it a lot.
I'm just reliving my disappointment from being 18 and seeing this in theaters. But it's okay. I'm glad I got to spend time with Merida. She's awesome.
Guys, go check it out. For next week, we're going to review...
What are we doing next week, Corbin? A bonus episode?
I think we're doing a movie.
I think it's a bonus episode.
Ooh, let's do a bonus episode.
Now that we've had this really deep discussion about Disney princesses, I feel like this is a strong possibility.
We'll do a bonus episode. And the reason why is partly because we've got some fantastic shows we're watching. Rings of Power.
The Rings of Power.
So Amazing Race.
Amazing Race just started.
Andor.
Andor just started. So Great British Baking Show.
Great British. I mean, there's a lot of good stuff. So we're going to take a little break from watching films. We're going to be creative, have fun, and do a bonus episode next week.
This has been another episode of The Neverland Files. Subscribe and review and join the conversation over on Instagram @TheNeverlandFiles. Thanks for listening.